This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And we've been doing several podcasts on the subject of anti-aging. Today, our guest is Dr. Oliver Medvedik. He is the vice president and a board member of something called LEAF, L-E-A-F. It's the Life Extension Advocacy Foundation. You can find them at leafscience.org. And they are involved in really cutting-edge research on anti-aging. Dr. Medvedik is co-founder of GenSpace, which is a citizen science lab in Brooklyn, New York. He earned his PhD at Harvard Medical School. He has done doctoral work using yeast as a model system to look at the processes that underlie aging in more complex organisms. Easier to study yeast and then extrapolate to human research. He got his degree in biology from Hunter College here in New York City. He's director of the Maurice Kanbar Center for Biomedical Engineering, and he teaches undergraduate and graduate students in systems biology and genetics. So, without further ado, Dr. Medvedik, it's a pleasure having you on the program. Tell us a little bit about the mission of LEAF. What's it all about?
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Basically, you summed it up pretty succinctly, but I can expand it a little further. So we have a number of different outreach efforts. So it's a nonprofit organization. I basically co-founded it with Keith Canimito, who's the president, and a number of other members who serve on the board currently, back in 2014. And basically, we wanted to essentially, promote or advocate for research directed towards the basic biology of aging, and also by extension, the diseases of aging that go along with that, dementias, cancers, for example, cardiovascular diseases. And frankly, we think, and the numbers bear it up that, aging is a huge problem in the developing world and also, globally in general. Unless we start tackling the root causes of aging, all of the, commensurate problems, the diseases of aging, are essentially going to become such an overwhelming burden that it's going to bankrupt healthcare around the world, as it's starting to do so already in many nations. So to that end, we have a number of different initiatives. One of them is lifespan.org. So we have a website where we essentially crowdfund for research projects that are in the biology of aging. So it's a crowdfunding platform. It's unique. We fiscally sponsor projects, so it's sort of like Kickstarter, but for aging research or diseases of aging. So any organization could be nonprofit, for profit, could be associated with a university, could be a biotech company. And you can check out the projects that we have right now. We just wrapped up a crowdfunding initiative for the SENS Research Organization. We just raised some money for their project. And that's sort of, you know, us putting our money where our mouth is, basically, you know, trying to raise private funding for research projects that will put a dent into diseases of aging and basically help elucidate the mechanisms of the aging process. We have a number of other outreach efforts where we basically try to, you know, we have a number of, we collaborate with YouTube channels to basically spread the message as to why this is so globally important. We, you know, I also do a monthly journal club, so it's live streamed on our Facebook page, where basically the latest papers that come out.
Is that the Longevity Book Club, or is that something?
That's different. So okay. Javier Norris, who's another board member of ours, he does the Longevity Book Club. Mm-hmm. So what I do is essentially I do a journal club where basically a scientific paper that's come out recently, usually within, you know, the past few months, we review it, basically go through it kind of in a little bit more nitty gritty detail than would be found on a blog. We do that as well. So we have a blog that's been run by Steve Hill and a number of other members of our organization, where we essentially, you know, summarize papers that were just recently published, and you know, and the Journal Club is sort of a much more deep dive into that.
Mm-hmm. It's more for aficionados and researchers, yeah, and you know, yeah, very wonky lay people.
Exactly. So we, you know, so we go through, you know, if not all of the, you know, figures, then certainly most of the relevant ones that we think, and try to dissect what the paper's all about and kind of the repercussions of the research for, you know, the dedicated lay and not so lay audience. So those are just some of the initiatives. We also have a conference that we started about 2 years ago. So we're planning for our third annual conference in New York City in August of 2020, which is based. Yeah, thanks. So it's grown. It was a 2-day conference.
That'll work for me because, you know, I'll definitely be there. That sounds great.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So we've had it for the past 2 years at Cooper Union, and we've kind of expanded beyond the capacity of where we've had it, which was at the Rose Auditorium, which had about 200 person capacity. So we're probably going to have it. We're looking at a couple of venues. I don't want to cement one right now, but we're potentially going to collaborate with Mount Sinai Medical School.
To be announced then, right?
To be announced, but let's say potentially Mount Sinai, but to be announced. So, you know, we're working behind the scenes to get the speakers and the venue up and running. But basically it's again kind of unique in the field of conferences in that we're trying to put we're trying to put the investors and the researchers under the same roof, so mm-hmm. to speak. So we have a lot of speakers that you know, are basic researchers, medical doctors presenting their research at the conference, but we also have biotech companies and we also have venture capitalists who are interested in funding this type of research and in this field. So, you know, instead of having people trying to hunt each other down, I think it was a success. People really enjoyed the one that we had this year where they can actually talk to potential funders right there at the conference. So I think it worked out very, very well. And we're going to have our third annual one. Like I said, we're planning for August of 2020.
Well, it sounds like there's two major streams in anti-aging research. On the one hand, there's the effort to address some of the major diseases that curtail longevity, metabolic syndrome, which is associated with diabetes and cardiovascular mm-hmm. disease and so much pathology. But there's also some very fundamental research that really seeks to unlock the aging code mm-hmm. to somehow figure out a way to extend human potential. Mm-hmm. Are you of the view that this is actually within reach? Some people are skeptical. They say that, you know, human lifespan is finite, and yes, we can keep people alive, perhaps to, you know, 100 or 110. But, you know, it's like when your time's up, your time's up. But others are a little more aggressive in their prognostications. They say that we can actually fundamentally alter human biology and biohack ourselves into becoming not just centenarians, but bicentenarians and tricentenarians mm-hmm. and so on.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, what you just stated. Yeah. I'm optimistic on all fronts, but clearly some things will happen sooner than others. So kind of to address sort of the sooner rather than the laters. So, you know, average lifespan has been increasing, and, you know, for the most part around the world. And that's been primarily because of improved hygiene and reduced infant mortality, but not really so much at the far end of the spectrum. So we're kind of hitting a wall there. And as you've mentioned, you know, there are you know, organisms do have finite average and maximal lifespans. I mean, you can basically look at, you know, measure the average lifespan of a mouse, measure, you know, look at the average lifespan of a human, the maximal lifespan. But even in that range of, you know, of people hitting, you know, their potential maximum lifespan, there's a lot of work that can be done as far as improving what a lot of researchers and a lot of medical doctors these days are referring to as the health span of a human being. You know, when we talk about increased lifespan, what we're really talking about is optimizing the health span. So without getting too advanced and too kind of far out there and talking about bicentenarians and tricentenarians, you know, there's people out there that are running marathons well into their 90s. And there's people that are bedridden and have, unfortunately, dementias in their 60s. And, you know, so there is a lot of malleability, a lot of flexibility as far as human health span is concerned. And you know, the questions are, one of the big questions is, you know, how can we enable most or all of us to essentially, you know, get to the point where we can run a marathon or be in a state where we're not bedridden for the vast majority of, you know, our life, until perhaps the very end. So there's a lot of work and there's a lot of interesting, you know, research that's taking place right now that suggests that there are very common attributes that can be basically, you know, tweaked here that can improve that. You know, there's a lot of research in, you know, so-called inflammaging, or, you know, basically the inflammatory
inflammaging. Okay.
Inflammaging, right. So basically where you know, one aspect of that would be the increased burden of senescent cells in the body. And, you know, do certain individuals, can they clear these senescent cells better? You know, there's a lot of work with compounds out there in mice and now in humans. So there's, in the Mayo Clinic, there's been some very small scale clinical trials have been very promising, where using drug combinations to basically tackle, you know, basically ablate and try to remove senescent cells and try to improve the health span, or at least certain disease manifestations of, you know, increased burden of senescent cells, such as certain cardiovascular conditions. So there's a lot of research in that respect taking place that is very promising. So so that's kind of one angle of tackling the root causes of aging. Now, as far as going beyond, you know, what some perceive, you know, as the maximal lifespan of aging, where, you know, a maximal lifespan of humans, where, you know, just through demographics, you know, let's say the number is around 120 some odd years. The bottom line is that for organisms, the aging process and the maximal lifespan of organisms and the average lifespan is highly malleable, evolutionarily speaking. So just, you know, stepping outside of humans, you know, you could see that there's a huge range of rates of aging in organisms. And not only that, but those rates of aging themselves can be, you know, altered through selective breeding, through genetic manipulation that's been seen in small worms, C. elegans, seen in fruit flies, seen in mice. So there's a huge body of evidence there that suggests that, you know, essentially the maximal lifespan of an organism is in of itself malleable. Now that, you know, in my opinion, that would be a much more harder challenge to overcome with, you know, for humans, because we would have to have a much more better grasp of what it means to, you know, to have what it means to essentially tackle the root causes of aging and what are essentially the root drivers of a longevity. So I think there has to be a little bit more, you know, fundamental research, maybe a lot more fundamental research that needs to take place to kind of tackle that. But I think right now, as far as improving our health span and getting people living longer without the burden of dementias, without the burden of other illnesses that come along with aging, I think that is going to be, you know, we're going to see a lot of promise, in that.
You know, so just a little bit of a pushback on this notion, and I'm sure that, you know, you've encountered this criticism. In fact, you have a nice blog on the LEF website about concerns about longer lives and, you know, the social implications of this. You know, we are already encountering problems funding our medical system and underwriting Medicare, for example, yeah. and Social Security, because when these programs were first initiated, the average lifespan was in the 60s. Now people mm-hmm. live well into their 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, on average, it's in the 70s, but, you know, so many mm-hmm. people living, well, you know, it's not uncommon to see people living in their 90s. So, you know, what happens to, you know, what are the societal implications of, you know, having lots and lots of people who are taking these wonderful anti-aging therapies, and yet their lives may be sustained through extraordinary medical measures, and ultimately they may become a burden on society.
Well, I don't think it's going to require extraordinary... hold on a second.
Let's keep in mind note is that Dr. Medvedik is actually talking to us from his lab.
Yeah, I apologize for that noise. Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on there in that anti-aging lab. So, you know, there may be some ambient noise coming through the background. But go ahead.
Yeah. Where were we? I forgot.
About concerns about, what the societal implications might be about people living well into their hundreds.
Yeah. So, first of all, I think that's a terrific problem to have. I don't think we should lament the fact that people are living, longer and healthier and extending essentially their work span as well. Because when we say burden, I mean, that's certainly not what we're after. We're not talking about, at the age of 60, putting people onto a respirator and then having people, take care of them for the next, 60 years or 70 years. The point is that the people will be, will be active members of society, will be healthy, will be happy, will be contributing members of society. If the problem is, burgeoning costs of Medicaid and Medicare and all of that, that's a societal problem that should be overcome. But that's something to do with a medical system, in my opinion, that's defective and broken and has been broken for a long time already, where essentially the costs are spiraling out of control because for other reasons, because the money's being misapplied and misused. But if people are going to be living longer because their health span is longer, because they're being active members of society and contributing members longer, that's a net positive. That's not a net negative. The issue is going to be if the bottom line is that we really can't afford not to extend people's health span, because currently, if we don't extend individuals' health span, the driving costs for Medicaid, Medicare, and all of these programs is the fact that people are getting older and at the same time suffering from the disease of aging.
A very high percentage of the expenditures are in the last, 2 or 3 years of life. And,
Exactly. Yeah. And the numbers for dementia are skyrocketing. I just read a report, that's put forward by the Alzheimer's .org association, where, essentially, if nothing is done, if we basically just say, we're just going to let dementia run its course, we're going to give up on looking for ways to tackle the root causes of aging and just let it happen naturally. That in of itself is going to bankrupt our current, if we keep operating the way we're operating and don't change a thing. That's essentially by 2050 going to bankrupt the entire system. So we really can't afford not to tackle the diseases of aging and not to extend human health span. I mean, that's essentially going to be the only thing that's going to save the medical system, in my opinion.
It seems to me there's sort of a rough dichotomy between lifestyle approaches like diet, involving different types of food regimens or caloric restriction or intermittent fasting, time-restricted feeding, exercise, natural supplements, versus a more high-tech approach, which may involve patented senolytic drugs, you know, pharmaceuticals, or high-tech applications like stem cells or CRISPR to extend life. Where do you lie on that spectrum? Are you just very ecumenical when it comes to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they all have, I mean, you know, research proceeds on many fronts, and certainly every researcher has their own niche and their own, you know, field to pursue, and I think all of it's important. You know, in a sense, you know, I guess I'm the dichotomy with me is I'm both optimistic and pessimistic at the same time, and that everything. Not really pessimistic, but a lot of the stuff that we've seen as far as lifestyle intervention choices that we can be making, I mean, a lot of these things have been known since the time of Moses, right? Right. People have known forever that, look, you know, eat your vegetables intermittently fast, you know, don't abuse
Hippocrates, things. You know, food is medicine, blah, blah,
right,
blah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, so you know, unfortunately, a lot of the disease drivers, you know, have been also a result of our industrialized society and eating too many sugars and not enough exercise and being in having a lifestyle that's basically very sedentary and so on and so forth. So so there's a lot to be said, you know, about wisdom from long ago, which now, as far as the research is concerned, we're learning as to why, you know, intermittent fasting perhaps works, which is, you know, there's evidence that it essentially boosts autophagy and causes misfolded proteins and other problematic aspects of, you know, cellular damage to be recycled. You know, so we're beginning to learn why some of these, you know, ancient techniques might be effective. But, you know, there is certainly room for improvement there, because not everybody's genome is perhaps optimized to take advantage of some of these interventions. So I think there's going to be there's certainly going to be interventions that will focus on isolating some of the molecules that are found in plant products, for example, such as polyphenols and flavonoids, that will have an effect on senescent cells. But you know, if you know, I think all of these interventions will go a long way towards improving the health span of individuals. Now, as far as, you know, applying things that are a little bit more radical, such as CRISPR, and actually changing your genome, I think that's completely, you know, not outside of the realm of possibility. I mean, we certainly can speculate how such an intervention would work. You know, we have individuals out there that basically, by having essentially an optimized genome, could essentially, you know, get to a very, very long, get to a very long period of life. You know, super centenarians, for example. And the question is, why do certain individuals get to this stage of, you know, of health span and others don't? You know, you can certainly make a plausible stab at saying, well, you know, if you somehow had a technique or technology that's much more advanced is now to essentially change the somatic genome of an individual to replicate that of that of a super centenarian, then you should be able to get the benefits. Now, how you would do that, how you would essentially, you know, target every individual cells, that's not currently within the realm of possibility, although it is possible, certainly, to do gene therapy. It is certainly possible to change multiple genes at once in model organisms, in mice, for example. I just reviewed a paper where, you know, essentially, Duchenne muscular dystrophy was essentially certain
big headlines on that. Yeah,
yeah, was cured in mice, or at least the mutation that's found in 16% of Duchenne muscular dystrophy was cured in a mouse model, and it was actually a pretty powerful paper, and you know, it laid the groundwork for an intervention in humans. So, you know, that's going to be a little bit more far out there, but like I said, evolutionarily speaking, and you know, biologically, you know, lifespan is very malleable. So, you know, the question is, you know, how do we, you know, we don't really know enough about what are all of the longevity pathways that need to be optimized to, you know, to increase, you know, the longevity of a human being beyond a certain point. But you know, that's what research has required. Right. You know,
so it might be a complex recipe. It might be a series of synergistic interventions that can A, reduce the susceptibility to disease, and B, yeah, fundamentally alter our programmed aging process. So really, that's where you're going. Okay, great. You've laid the groundwork for our discussion of anti-aging beautifully here. And in part two, I want to focus on, you know, some specific strategies. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about diet, supplements, nutrition, some of the higher tech interventions that are contemplated for anti-aging. Our guest is Dr. Oliver Medvedik. He's vice president and board member of LEAF, Life Extension Advocacy Foundation. You can find them at leafscience.org. And we'll be right back with part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.